Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 250. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, that sounds like surf music. Is that in honor of Mavericks? You got it, baby. There we go.
Mavericks and the big waves that are going on in Hawaii and the West Coast.
Yeah, I see on the news that somebody just broke a record there.
Yeah, and that was Phil Wilson, and he's on too.
But I'm not surfing.
You're not surfing. Well,
not at all.
Yeah. The web.
He's surfing the web.
Did you? Yeah, it's very true. Very true. Did you see that, Graham? Were you aware of that? That there was some sort of record set at Mavericks?
Record for what?
Big waves.
You mean size of wave?
Size of wave, or I think it. Yeah, size of wave and longest run off that wave, I think, something like that.
Huh. Well, I don't know who administers those awards, but there's all kinds of claims of the world's biggest wave from all over the place.
No, don't be such a buzzkill.
All the time. there is no one organization, but they were gigantic waves. I mean, 40-foot faces easily. I was watching the live stream, and it was crazy. There were also some of the worst wipeouts I've seen at that event. And only guys that are unbelievable athletes that are trained, you know, to hold their breath underwater for upwards of 4 minutes, could survive those kind of wipeouts. And of course, they've got the jet skis, you know, going to rescue guys when they do wipe out. Or get caught inside. There's a GoPro video of a guy that got a really amazing athlete. I forget which guy it is now. Getting caught inside, which is where you do not want to be in big surf. And it shows his GoPro camera on his board capturing him, taking a huge gulp of air and going down while his board flips over.
I was watching a snippet on ESPN, and then I read something afterwards about the fact that the reason that Mavericks breaks the way it does and so high is that there are these gigantic pillars of rock.
Shelf, stick up, and
you land on one of those things, that's it, you're done.
Well, you know, I heard the commentator saying nobody ever hits bottom there. It's pretty deep, but there are rocks as you come in. I mean, one wipeout, the guy's board landed on the rocks and was bouncing around. And I don't know if you recall, but back in the 90s, a big wave surfer from Hawaii, Mark Fu, was killed. Yeah. At Mavericks, and it was because he did hit a rock, is my understanding. But that was before the event really took off, and it's a dangerous place. I mean, it's horrendous to, and you can't really appreciate it with the long shots, the video cameras that are shooting from way back on the cliff. You know, sometimes you can get they show shots from the boats. You know, because.
Uh-oh, he got hit by a wave. Damn.
Oh man, no. Knocked him right off his board.
I hate when that happens.
Now he's got to hold his breath for 4 minutes.
Well, they aren't really under for 4 minutes in a wipeout, but you dropped out there.
That's what we were talking about. You dropped out. I don't know what happened, but you dropped out mid-sentence there. So.
Oh, well, anyway, yeah, they aren't held under for 4 minutes, but they train to hold their breath that long. But even if you're underwater for 30 seconds, which some of them were, it's amazing. It's like, you know, with the forces that are hitting them in that kind of volume of water, it's crazy. And then they have vests that inflate that they wear under their or over their wetsuits. That kind of inflate up around their shoulders to pop them up to the top. And several of these top athletes were deploying those vests. So it was crazy. It was awe-inspiring to watch that competition.
I'm just going to stick to jumping out of airplanes without a parachute.
There you go.
Forget this surfing stuff. That's not.
So Graham, how come no one's invented like a really small breathing apparatus to give you like 5 minutes of air?
Well, probably because it's too bulky. But
James Bond had one in Thunderball. It was just like it looked like a pen.
Hey, there is a new one, and I'll put a link in the show notes. There is a new one that is small that you can I think you do have about 5 minutes of air.
You'd think for this kind of thing.
I think it's because these guys are so macho and they're such athletes, and it's really a small community. I mean, the number of people in the world that ride big waves of that size is very, very limited. So they would kind of see that as wussing out. But, you know, but there are shark repellent devices now that are being marketed, and they're the hottest thing going that you wear around your ankle. They have questionable value, according to some researchers, to, you know, they might scare away small sharks, but the big ones, you know, so I don't know what good they'd be, but in Australia and other places where they've had a lot of shark attacks, and Hawaii on Maui, there have been some shark attack deaths this last year. So there is a lot of technology coming into to surfing for sure. But, you know, your average surfer doesn't get held under all that long. But I've been in situations where I got caught inside like that and I almost drowned twice. Once at Huntington Beach and once at Salt Creek in Laguna Niguel, where the Ritz-Carlton is there. And it is unbelievably humbling, you know, when you come, you know, get washed up on shore, you know, like crawling, clawing the sand, like, you know, thankful to be alive. I mean, it's scary.
And all the veterans out there are looking at you like, what a puss.
They're pointing and laughing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But no, there was a competition held at in somewhere in San Diego County not long ago that was televised, and it showed a top surfer getting caught inside and getting thrown up onto the rocks, and the rescue squad had to go and get him. I mean. So, and you know, when you see these big wave surfers at Mavericks and what happened to them yesterday, I mean, go watch the replays are still up there where the live streams were, you know, and you can still watch this thing. There were guys going over backwards over the falls, as they say, you know.
Wow.
It's like, oh my God, if you've ever been out in surf and gotten thrown around, you can only imagine the force of Mavericks. So anyway, enough.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you talk about the force of Mavericks, and of course, Mavericks is the nickname for the latest operating system for Mac. And this is a big week for Mac. So how's that for a segue, guys?
There you go.
Oh,
I
man.
Love that.
Wow.
Kind of just move right
that
from
was
one to the other.
Awesome.
And I know this is a big week. I believe Steve and Graham took the day off of work on the 30th anniversary of the Mac. But
yes, we did.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
We put the kneeler down so we could humbly lean forward while we prayed.
I was looking for my Hallmark card, you know, wishing me a happy birthday to Mac.
Well, 30 years of the Mac. Yeah. Yeah. Just to, I mean, and of course there was a great, homage to everything Mac on Apple's site. And then a lot of other people did a lot of things too. And
well, I love the tear down of the Mac. That's you know the un-
yeah.
Like, even showed the little coal fired furnace in it and the steam generator that comes with it
and the place to put your gerbil to expand the CPU.
Well, it's still a good looking machine though. I mean, for something that's that old, you know, there was a lot of care put into the design of the motherboard and all the components.
Yeah, I've always been sort of disappointed the way it yellowed over years, but it's still a
yeah, that machine. Bugs me too. Yeah, my SE30, it's got the yellow thing going.
Does it really
look cool if it was black? If the instead of having this you know beige machine,
yeah.
Ooh, spray paint.
Oh, you could do that.
you could probably buy an aquarium. Everybody back. Turned them into aquariums. You know.
Yeah, a lot of people did. Those
or bongs, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Well, so I just have to say it that I did a post that I published in 2005. I just have to just talk about this for just a second because I was with a rep firm, Clothier Herald Company, and we were the Apple reps for Minnesota, North and South Dakota, and Western Wisconsin. And I had South Dakota and Southern Minnesota as my territories. And I had a dealer that had bought the Lisa, and all the stuff he had to buy with Lisa, and it basically put him out of business because the downstroke was like 50 grand and then they didn't sell any because they were out in Wilmer. But we got to go to the international sales meeting in Hawaii in November of 1983, and they were going to do something new. And so here we are in this auditorium, and Steve Jobs comes out and the music starts, and he, you know, there's videos online of this, but he rolled out the Mac to the company and showed the ad. He showed the ad first and then rolled the thing out to the company. And then afterwards we had breakout groups, and I had Susan Kerr, the woman that did the icons for the Mac.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And my buddy, Eric, he was in Steve Jobs' breakout group. And it was funny because Jobs literally every day wore the same thing, a green polo shirt, a pair of jeans and sandals that we called his Jesus sandals because that's what they look like. But
and he had that aroma.
Well, I didn't get that close to
no,
him.
No, he was taking showers by then.
Was he?
Probably.
Yeah.
Rebel.
But then they had this MASH party because MASH, the TV show, was such a big deal at the time. And Jobs and Scully arrived in a MASH helicopter.
Of course.
And they set it down. They had all these MASH tents set up. And, you know, I wish now, there was one Polaroid photo that I've seen that one of the guys took. That's the only thing I've seen is any kind of a record of it. There's nothing online. Apple's never published anything. But that was quite an experience to look back on and reflect on. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that in.
You know, I did. If you get a chance to click on the link in the show notes, make sure you take a look at the piece from Steve and when his blog post in 2005. But what's depressing, Steve? No picture of you from 1983.
Yeah, that's because I was about 185 pounds, a lot of hair and all that. So
why? So why no picture of you? I'm kind of disappointed. See what you look like then.
Oh my God. All right.
Okay.
So yeah. So the Mac has been around for a while.
Long way.
Yeah, it has.
And it sounds like it's going to be around for a while longer. So that's good.
So, whose Mac was, who hit, what was their first Mac? If we just
Steve, has the oldest, Steve has the oldest Mac. I have the second oldest one though.
Yeah. I got a Mac Plus. Well, it's because because we were repping Apple, I got to just use one for free.
Right.
And so I never bought one. And then when I left Apple or left the rep firm, I bought a Mac Plus.
There you go.
So,
and Tim, you had an
SE, which I got in early, 87, and I used it for 10 years until it got, fried in a lightning strike.
Jeez.
Oh, wow.
I had it running a BBS on my desk at Kodak, and
what software?
It was all the time. I think it was First Class.
Yeah. That was actually great BBS software. Yeah,
I was running a First Class server there, and I had run it for several years off that Mac, and it was running all the time. And there was a lightning storm, and I came back in, and
boom,
it didn't work.
No, bummer.
So then I switched to something more recent. I think it was a 2CI or CX, one of those, for the server after that.
I had my first Mac, the first purchase of mine was a MacBook Pro, and that's not so hard to remember because that was just in 2007. So when I started hanging out with you guys, I had to be like everybody else, you know.
Well, you're a PC guy before then?
I was a PC guy because into the broadcast industry, everything was built around the PC.
So yeah,
everything was in DOS.
Blame it on CBS.
Yeah, but I did use a 2E, an Apple 2E back in 86, 87, because we had one at the office that we used. It would, you know, it was just, we used it for word processing. Woo! It's exciting.
Well, you know, I just put a link in the show notes to a post I wrote called Stop Your Whining, and it has to do with about how affordable stuff is. And I bought a 2CI from an Apple employee, and they get to buy things at 60% of retail. Mm-hmm. And the 2CI with a 13-inch monitor, keyboard, you know, and a couple of cables and stuff, $4,193.
Oh my God.
And I bought that in 1990.
And yeah, those are good machines, though.
It was a good machine, but I can remember my wife saying to me, now, why do you need one in color? Because I had a Mac SE 30 with a big hard drive. She goes, why do you need a color one? So
just because.
Like, yeah, just because.
Just because. I remember my first notebook computer, my laptop, my first laptop was a Compaq. I think the screen was maybe 9 inches, and it, you know, it was this huge brick of a thing that, you know, had a border that was 3 inches wide all the way around it, and this little itty bitty screen in the middle of it. I remember getting grief from all sorts of my colleagues. Why you got such a little screen? Well, I wanted it in color.
Yeah.
So tiny.
Well, you know, and it's I don't know if you guys have kept technology, but I've got an old Motorola flip phone here. I've got several old phones.
Back there in the Steve Borsch Museum.
Museum, yeah. But I have the first iPod that I bought for Elizabeth, and then it had a problem. And you look at that iPod now, and it's just laughingly vintage. It's just amazing how fast things have moved.
Yeah,
well, I always liked that first one because it had a true mechanical wheel on it.
Oh, you know? Terms of the mouse?
Yeah, no, the wheel on the iPod. It was actually a
mechanical thing. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like a real thing. It wasn't like on the later ones that was replaced by just a sensor.
Touch sensor, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
right.
That really didn't spin physically. So that first one just had this very satisfying feel to it.
Right.
Now, listen, enough strolling down Mac Lane here.
We got to get back to it.
Yeah, well, we just lost Graham. He just had a problem with his internet. But
he seems to have lost everything. Yeah. Let's talk briefly about some of the events that were going on.
Yeah, over the that's week. What I was just going to say. Why don't you tell us about MIMA?
I was there for just half of the event simply because I joined Graham at the Bring Me the News event that was over at the Muse in the North Loop. But
and MIMA stands for, so everyone
Minnesota
knows.
Interactive Marketing Association, which has really kind of gone through a big transition of new leadership. They had one of their first event of the year was at Coco Uptown. And highlighted a bunch of folks that were involved in Kickstarter campaigns. Of course, Zach Cipolla from Spark was there, and some other folks. And they spoke about the experience of going through the process of Kickstarter, but also some failing, some then coming back and succeeding, and how it impacted their startup and their business. So, and then I went from that and shot across town to. The Bring Me the News was part of an event hosted by, and I'm trying, I want to hang on a second. Let me just make sure that I pronounce it right. I believe it's Sabus JCC, which is a Jewish organization. And they brought in a couple of speakers to talk about what was going on in entrepreneurship. They I believe it was Greg Lieberman of Spark Networks fame.
I've never met him. Have you guys?
No.
Yeah, we met him that night.
Well, obviously. That night.
Yeah. No, but he's CEO of JDate and Christian Mingle, and he talked a lot about that experience of. You know, and I found it quite fascinating. It was really, you know, the event was called Spark, sort of a celebration of innovation. And really there was no innovation being talked about. It was all about entrepreneurs. And we also had the opportunity to hear from, who else was there? A woman who founded Tremendous Media, which is a media public. They're the ones that produce, Bizarre Foods with Andrew Zimmern. And,
Oh, yeah.
That's a local company as well. And then also the guy from Two Gingers, Kieran, what was his name? Last name. I can never remember his last name. But they all talked about, the startup and the entrepreneur spirit. It was a good event. So, but cold. Let me tell you, it was cold out there that night. That was all happening on Wednesday night. So we were a little chilly. Or was it Thursday night? I don't remember. Whatever that cold night was.
Yeah, but the best is yet to come because Monday night, early Tuesday morning will be minus 24.
Yeah.
So
blah, blah, blah. You know, yeah. I always get a kick out of the, oh, it's so cold. You're in Minnesota, people. You know, this is what we do.
And well, but it's been a rough winter. You have to say, come on.
It hasn't been that tough. Come on.
Really?
I mean, when was the last? No, really, seriously.
This has been as bad as it's been since we've been here. We've been here 16 years.
But do you have to take a covered wagon to town? Do you have to walk out to do chores in the barn? Now, come on, now. It's not that tough. We get in our walk out of our heated garages, hop into our warmed up cars, and we drive where we need to go. Pull into the parking ramp, walk through the skyway. I mean, it's not like we get chilled.
But we get chilled.
Yeah. Well, so. I'm a little chilled.
Oh, man.
Come on. We're hardier stock than this.
That's true.
We are a hardier stock. So, and I'm so now I'm officially getting worried about Graham as he communicated.
So he can't call us back on his cell phone.
Well, I see him there.
You do?
Yeah.
Why can't he just Skype back in on his iPhone?
Well, here, I'll add him to the call. I have no idea why he doesn't really know technology.
Closet Luddite.
And we sometimes give Graham grief about that. But, you know, he doesn't necessarily know gadgets, but he knows technology. So,
yeah. Those gadgets too. He's got like all of them.
Yeah, but he didn't know how to work most of them. So,
well, you know.
But that's okay.
He's like the everyman.
All right, Mr. Retail, what's going on with Best Buy this week?
I thought this was interesting. They're selling that Mind Shift, which at the time, remember when they bought them, and we thought, what the heck are they going to do with this cloud computing thing?
I was under Robert Stevens' watch, right?
I don't think it was.
No, it was pre Robert Stevens. No, I can't.
Well, it was 2011. So when did Robert leave Best Buy? Wasn't it around that time?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I think you're right.
I think this was right around the time, right after. Anyway, you know, they paid $126 million for it, and I guess that the strategy at the time was to bundle it with Geek Squad so they could sell to, you know, medium-sized businesses a full suite of services, including cloud computing. And now they're selling it to Rico.
Well, I think their strategy was, you know, couple that with the purchase of Napster, was to figure out a way to throw as much money away as possible.
Well, no,
Napster made sense, and Cinema Now makes sense because their disc business is going away.
Yeah, so they CDs have to, and DVDs are just vanishing.
Yeah, but they bought Napster. They bought the antique of the online sharing world. You know, so
well, Napster still had a good brand. I mean, it was classic.
Terrible brand. It had a tarnished brand. It was like the Love Boat of file sharing.
No, it was the pirates. I mean, come on.
The pirates failed.
They were the original pirates.
Yeah, but I thought it was a bad idea. Anyway.
All right. Anyway, they got rid of it. Makes sense.
Let's not pick the nit.
So it was just like, you know, it's one of those things where when they did it, I'm like, what? So now at least they're doing the right thing. Yeah. They're focusing on retail.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, we face that every day when we deal with Best Buy. There's a constant, hello, somebody calling?
I'm adding Graham by calling his iPhone.
So there's Graham.
Hello.
He's at the bottom of the well now.
What's that?
What happened?
My internet connection apparently went down and I had to go reboot everything. And I did, and it still doesn't appear to be working. So I don't know what's
going
on.
Well, you're on Skype. Your Skype connection is active.
Well, that's weird because I can't get anything else to work. You aren't having problems with Google again, are you?
No.
We're not quite to that story.
There was problems with Google, you say?
Oh, God. Yesterday was unbelievable for me. Thank God it wasn't a heavy work day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing? I'm constantly amazed at, you know, when something like that happens. Yesterday, we're working, and you know that we're fairly heavy into Google services, and it was like, oh my God, I can't do anything. I'm cut off from the real world.
I just thought that it was running slow on my system. I thought there was a problem locally, but then other sites seemed to work fine. And then I saw on Twitter that people were saying, "Hey, it's down."
Well, that's exactly what I did. And you know, it's funny, Phil, because I ended up realizing that I made one fundamental error, which was all of my primary email addresses. I have four that are in Google Apps, and then I have my public or my consumerish Gmail account. So none of them worked. I was trying to send a zip file to a woman in Germany. That's one of our clients, and it was time sensitive because, you know, it was 7 hours ahead, and I couldn't get the damn thing sent. I finally had to send it with my Yahoo account.
What?
There you go.
Yeah. How professional is that?
Did you get a card from Marissa right away?
Yeah, I know.
Steve, you're back. What's up?
And you know what my address is? It's Borschke at Yahoo.
I remember the Borschke. Yeah.
So how professional is that? Huh?
You had a lot of Borschke identities at that time.
I'm sure that woman was very happy with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sending it to Poland. That would be even worse.
Yeah.
So that was yesterday. Yeah, right. That was yesterday about what? 3 o'clock yesterday? 2 o'clock yesterday.
Yeah.
1:30-ish. 2:33. And you know, I don't know, the ironic piece to this story is, you know, and of course when I'm surrounded by developers and engineers and just geeks in general, and you know, they're immediately hitting Google or Twitter or hitting Twitter to you know, find out what's going on, and you know, immediately discover that Google engineers were in the middle of a Reddit "Ask Me Anything."
Yeah,
site reliability during the Gmail outage when it went down.
And it turned into a Gmail pissing contest. Everybody was screaming at these guys.
Yeah, and they kind of suspended the "Ask Me Anything."
So I like the one where it says, "Get back to work, everything's borked."
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, and it's, but you know what it really does point out to is the fact that we are all so hyper dependent on the internet now for accomplishing work. And it was funny because my wife ended up having to take her iPhone into the Genius Bar. And the guy said, you know, we'll need it probably 45 minutes because they were going to do a couple things to it because she was having issues with battery life just going away. And it turned out that it was some email in her outbox that was trying to be sent. And and it couldn't send. So it was trying like every 8 seconds to try to send it. And anyway, the punchline is we're walking around the mall and I said, "Where are you going to go?" And she goes, "I'm going to go into Macy's." And I said, "Well, I'm going to walk over to Brookstone." And she said, "Wait a second, I don't have my phone, so we're going to have to agree when and where to meet," just like the old days.
Yeah.
But she was complaining about how dependent she is on it. She says,
"Well, did you tell her we'll meet at the malt shop and share a malt, and then you come on?"
No, I told her come out to the 57 Chevy that we're having in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, man. I'm back up, guys. Should I get back on Skype now?
God, there we are.
I don't see you connected.
Sort of personally, ask me. I don't know.
Well, I closed Skype, I think, so I'm reopening it.
All right.
But yeah. I'm definitely back online here. I don't know what happened, but I finally got Google to come back up.
Okay. Well, why don't you stay on a second, and then I'll drop you when I see you on Skype, and we'll come back up. But
hey, we'll talk about this jobs report.
Yeah. Well, before you go, as it's coming back up here, this article about that was in MinnPost about Minnesota adding 9,500 jobs in December. You know, whenever I see a headline like that, it's like, oh man, that's really good news. And then you actually read it, and you look
and
at
it's all burger flippers.
Well, no, not really. There was actually
What is in trade, transportation, and utilities, which added 4,600 new jobs? What is that classification? Do we know what kind of jobs those are?
Well, trade.
You know, railroads.
So
baby.
Like truck
railroads.
Drivers or something?
Well, I mean, I'm not really sure.
I think that would be considered the blue collar force.
So, okay.
Well, government, trade's probably
that's not good.
but not manufacturing, or it would say manufacturing.
Well, manufacturing was up 1,700, so that was in third place.
Yeah. Mm. Well, in professional and business services up by 1,000 jobs. What's interesting is that, I've got actually three clients who have begun expanding their consulting and services businesses, and they're adding people. So that was kind of interesting. And it's a reaction to demand. So.
Yep. Yeah. Things are definitely heating up. I mean, I see it in a lot of ways, you know, just increased business activity and people wanting to spend, you know.
Right.
And that's not Fortune 500. Okay, now I'm getting back on the Skype call.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So should I end my iPhone?
Yes,
please.
Okay.
Russell. Yes, we can hear you, Graham. Good. Graham, before we get too far along here, I did chat a little bit about the CMS JCC event that we went to, the Spark Innovation deal. But I found it interesting. I didn't find it necessarily dwelling on the topic of innovation, but it was interesting to hear perspective from entrepreneurs. But what were your takeaways of the event?
Well, you know, it was a great entrepreneur event. I mean, I always love hearing stories of entrepreneurs, and I thought it was all Minnesota entrepreneurs, but I guess that first guy wasn't, but the other three definitely were. Well, if you count the moderator,
right.
But you know, hearing Colleen Needle's story was pretty amazing.
Who was from Tremendous Entertainment or Tremendous Productions?
Yeah, which has offices in Eden Prairie and North Hollywood. And counting contractors employs upwards of 100 people. So, you know, I'd forgotten all about her, and she's been off CCO for 15 years. Doesn't seem that long. She still looks pretty darn good, you know, and, but anyway, the other story, it's always fun to hear Kieran, talk about, his local, whiskey.
What is Kieran's last name? I'm sorry. I couldn't remember it.
Folliard.
That's Folliard, or Folliard,
Folliard or Folliard. I don't know how he pronounces it. But the Irish dude is, it's always fun to hear his stories. And, you know, the story from Lieberman, the guy who's CEO of this Spark Networks, which apparently doesn't have a Twitter account, at least I couldn't find one. But it has all these dating sites, which I'm sure all have Twitter accounts. J-Date and Christian Mingle and all this, and it sounds like a big outfit, publicly traded, LOV, stock symbol. So I hadn't heard that story, but it wasn't really a Minnesota story at all.
It was still an interesting evening.
Yes, it was. It was a star-studded
evening.
Clientele that showed up there crammed into that little, you didn't even get up to that third floor room we were crammed into. You could hardly move in that.
Yeah, that's because that's where all the free drinks were. So, you know, got there, I started to head that way, and then they had closed it, and there was this flood of people coming down.
Yeah, so they were trying to push us down to the main floor. I'd never been at that Muse Center, but
it's
great. But the audio, did you talk about the audio?
I didn't ridicule the audio.
Oh, my God. I think they took the audio guy out and beat him up in the alley after that.
And I, you know, Graham, do you remember when the audio guy finally came out and said, we're having audio problems, you know, after about 20 minutes?
Right.
Did he, I don't recall him ever apologizing. Did he apologize?
No, he didn't. And it's like he comes out and tells us the obvious. The audio problems had been going on for about
They kept handing the guy different mics, you know? It's just like... Yeah.
Well, but it took the guy to come out. It took him a long time to come out with that mic that finally worked.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, gosh, in a fancy place like that, have audio problems? Come on. How many events must they have in there?
Yeah, it was kind of embarrassing. But anyway... What else is going on?
Well, there's a company called Optimine Software that I think is kind of interesting, and they just raised $4.15 million. And what's cool about it, and Tim, you probably could weigh in more on this than I could from a technology perspective, but what they've done is they've basically positioned this software as a measurement and optimization for ads, but on a cross-platform basis. So rather than say we're going to base everything on cookies, we're going to base it on the channel itself and what happens in the channel.
And it's called Optimine, by the way, Steve.
Isn't that what I said?
Yeah.
I think you said Optimize, which is very close, but...
Oh, yeah, I meant Optimine. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yep, because I'm looking right at their site. But what I like about this is the fact that I can't tell you how many times I've looked at something and then picked up my iPad and walked in the other room and went to it and continued to look at it. And then later on in the car, I'm showing my wife and I'm there. So I'm coming into the site on three different devices. And so if right. I was one customer, I'm still coming in on three channels. And mm-hmm. And so trying to see which one converts and which one, you know, is optimized, I think is key. So this is an interesting approach. I'm just not sure about its effectiveness. I haven't really seen much on that.
So. Well, you know, Ann Winblad is behind it from Hummer Winblad Ventures and is on their board. And it's a very amazing team. A lot of Silicon Valley kind of folks on the team, but it is based here. And the CEO and the CTO, Robert Cooley, whom I've met, he was at the last mini demo or the one before that. He's a U of M product, PhD in computer science. Hey, did you see one of your former Vignette colleagues is senior VP of worldwide sales? I don't know if he was a direct colleague of yours, but Sefton Cohen.
Oh,
was
sure.
He there while you were there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
He
I'll
lived out in Connecticut, but he's their head of sales and they've got a full-on team and they're into at least Series B or Series C now with this.
Well, they've got some case studies on their website that do talk about success, you know, 17% increase in daily conversions and on one, and then a retailer drove 23% more revenue. And you know, it's key that we find ways to optimize stuff on a cross-channel basis, because otherwise, you know, who the buzz knows? Talk about not being able to measure the effectiveness of your advertising. So
yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of optimization stuff going on here between them and lead pages, you know, optimizing landing pages. We seem to have a mini cluster going on here in Minnesota.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wondered if there was a connection with the CTO. I think he might go back to the team that was behind Net Perceptions. I could be wrong, but I think he came out of the U of M and was colleagues with some of those technologies that were behind all that collaborative filtering stuff back in the late 90s. That would be a common thread with Ann Winblad, certainly.
Yeah.
But it's good news for Minnesota startup community again.
Well, and speaking of that, venture funding rose in the state of Minnesota, but I was just absolutely shocked when it was 8 of the 14 firms that attracted capital were medical device companies.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, please, really? I mean, it makes sense because that we're life science alley or medical alley, whatever they want to term it in terms of devices.
They're trying to hype that med tech investing really isn't down as much as people think. And so they're doing studying all forms of funding into med tech, including angel and corporate funding, which isn't as easily tracked, but they're tracking it now. And their report, which is cited in the Tribune story, is trying to say, wait a minute, the sky isn't falling in medical devices. Well, you know, that's they're an industry trade group, so of course they would say that, you know, but 69 million was invested in the state in medical devices and equipment, but 43 million was invested in software. So that's not far behind, and software continues to grow, I think, as a percentage of the whole. As far as venture investing in Minnesota. And, you know, one quarter isn't a trend, as they say. This just happened to be a good quarter,
right,
for medical devices, because there were a few big deals that kind of skewed the results. But there were also some very nice deals in software and internet, which aren't all mentioned in that story. But, you know, an Optimine would be a first quarter story rather than a fourth quarter of 2013 story.
Yep.
So, you know, but I don't think there's any doubt that med tech as a percentage of the whole is declining in Minnesota because of the FDA and because of the medical device tax, which, you know, now I think both our senators are fighting to get that repealed.
Well, I think it really needs to be, because there are so many that are leaving. In fact, my neighbor next door, they moved to Pennsylvania. They have a medical private equity fund. And because of the capital gains and the taxes, they just said it just doesn't make sense. So they relocated to Philadelphia, which is where one of the founders is from. And we can't afford to lose anybody, frankly.
No.
Hey,
no.
I got a question for you guys. Who has a TiVo?
I do. I have two of them.
And Phil, Graham?
Nope.
Do you guys have DVRs?
We just have what DirecTV gives us.
Okay.
I think it's a TiVo. It's TiVo technology, I think.
So you have a digital video recorder, a DVR, mm-hmm. so you can record shows. Okay. Well, right. So there was an announcement that came out about, and I think, Tim, you put this in the show notes, about TiVo laying off basically all of their hardware engineers. And
except for two
and then focusing on software. And
yeah, what I found disturbing about this is, you know, TiVo has been this great company, almost Apple-like. They were very innovative, have been at this for 15 years. And it looks like they're just getting out of the hardware business altogether. And they're going to be dependent on cable companies to build the hardware devices, and they're going to sell them the software.
Well,
so from a company that could build the ultimate cord cutters device, they're this retreating, and they're just going to become a software company that sells a value added layer on top of cable companies' DVRs.
Well, so that was my initial reaction. My initial reaction was, oh man, this is not a good thing. And especially with Comcast, you know, Comcast has their own storage. They got a huge data center in the Twin Cities, and it's all about on-demand movies and TV shows and all of that. But then I began to think about the behavior that my wife and I have with respect to shows. And what's interesting is now with Netflix, with the Xfinity app, with the Apple TV or Roku, you've got the PBS app, you've got all these apps, and I realize, you know, I don't have to record a specific show because I can see it streaming. So that's the good news. The bad news is that typically the stream is highly compressed, and it's got a less bit depth than the recorded off the air or recorded off the cable or satellite feed. And so the quality is always less.
Well, the streaming apps on the TiVo are not as good as they are on Roku or Apple TV either.
Agreed.
So that's the problem. I mean, they did just revise the Netflix app, and it is better than it's ever been, but it's still not as good as other boxes that do the same thing. One thing I do like is the ability to search across both what's on TV and what's available through Amazon or Netflix or Hulu or whatever. That's good, but I think that the search is better on the new Roku than it is on TiVo for doing the same thing.
Huh, the very latest Roku, or as opposed to the one or two generations back?
Yeah, no, the one that's running the newest software. So I think that I have the highest end Roku 2, which is the 1080p one. And I think that that's running the same software as the Roku 3 is.
So So the search is a lot better now, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The only thing you don't get on the Roku is you don't get, obviously, what's on TV, which is kind of nice to know, which you do on the TiVo. But the TiVo is, it works. Let's put it that way. It works. It's not quite as good, the search. But on Roku, it just makes sense. And you can, like, you know, search on a movie or an actor or whatever, and it'll show you what's on no matter what the channel is.
Cool. I got to get that one.
Well, it seems to make sense, though, that they're moving to the cloud, because it's got to be strategic enough for them that that's where the viewing is happening, is in the cloud. So
true, but what makes TiVo an Apple-like product is it's an optimization of the hardware and the software.
Right.
And to see them just drop into a software company, I think is not good. I don't think they're going to be with us for very much longer. Because this was the first stage for Replay TV, which had a great solution, and they got litigated out of business because they had an automatic way to skip commercials that actually worked.
Yeah.
And so they became a software company, and then a year or two later, they were done. So,
wow.
Anywho, I just thought this is a sad story.
Yeah. Well,
software is not the answer for everybody, huh?
No, I mean, it's to make something like a TiVo, it needs to be this marriage of the hardware and the software together. And there is a advantage of having stuff local as opposed to everything being streamed off the cloud, because, you know, if my internet goes down, I can still watch all the recorded shows, can still watch TV, you know, through my TiVo, where if everything was cloud-based, I couldn't do, you know, I'd just be out of luck.
Well, and see, what I like is being able to record stuff on the TiVo, and then there's a little iTiVo app for the Mac, and I can pull the shows and movies off the TiVo and then use Handbrake, and then my wife, when she travels, has lots of stuff to watch. She'll say, oh, please don't watch the next Parenthood, you know, or Modern Family or whatever that's recorded. So I'll just dump it onto something and stick it on her iPad, and then say, here you go. Make sure you watch it, because I'm going to watch it while you're gone. So, oh, man. Hey, there was one other thing that came out, which just came out about Apple. Is rumored to be exploring expansion of mobile payments. And I have to admit, I am stunned that it's taken this long.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, well, when you think about all the credit cards they have and on file and all the stuff they know about people and everything else. I mean, how easy would it be for them to move into online payments?
Did they make an acquisition? I'm trying to remember in that area.
I don't know.
Or is it just a rumor that they're looking into it or doing something internally?
Well, it's all a rumor.
Yeah, everything's a rumor with Apple.
This is one of the more obvious things they could do. Who knows if they're going to actually do it. There's also a rumor that they're going to do something with NFC, too, which sounds like it makes no sense.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it's something related to this. To this mobile commerce stuff. So maybe they will do something with NFC that relates to buying stuff.
Well, and you remember they bought Authentic, that mobile security firm, and they bought it because of the fingerprint sensor technology, but apparently they had a bunch of other stuff too that could be incorporated in the operating system. And so it seems to make sense. The only thing that frustrates me is, you know, the fingerprint, you guys don't, you, and Tim and Phil don't have an iPhone, but and there have been a lot of complaints about this, but I'm constantly, probably once a week, going in and deleting the two fingerprints, each thumbprint that I have recorded in the touch, and redoing it because it stops working.
Yeah.
And then I redo it and it works great. Do you have the same problem?
Yeah. I get to the point where it takes so long to do it. I just enter my 4-digit code. You know, it's faster.
Yeah.
So, well, you're redoing yours, huh?
I'm redoing it, but I also have a 10-digit code. So, because I did the complex code, so I've got a much longer one for security stuff. Well, because I've got, you know, Schwab and my LastPass and all this stuff on there, so I want to make sure it's secure.
Mm-hmm. So, well, you would. You're the security man of all time.
Well, should we do it, Phil?
Sure, do it. Fire it up. I really wish I had a...
Steve's security tip of the week.
I love that.
All right, so here's the security tip of the... I know. Here's a security tip of the week, and it is an interesting one, and it's one that I actually ran into. That's why I was so interested in it. So there was a web developer who warned of a Chrome exploit, and it's an exploit that I've only seen happen once, and it was inadvertent because I know the guy who wrote the app, and it was in beta. But what it does is that you grant permission for the web app to be able to use your microphone, or if it's video with WebRTC, you can say, hey, you can use my webcam. And you guys have all done that, right? Where you've granted permission to have it use your microphone and so forth. Well, as it turns out, there's a little video about the exploit. As it turns out, a rogue site could very easily do a pop under window that would keep the microphone active even if you turned it off.
Huh.
So typically up in the address bar, you'll see a little blinking red. And if you turn the microphone off, if you have it go off, it can still be running in the background in this pop under window and be recording everything you're saying. And so, you know, Google doesn't think it's a problem. They've reported it. And it probably pretty much isn't if you're, a high-level geek that lives in San Francisco and works at Google and knows how to set your privacy things on everything that you touch and so on. But for 99% of the humans out there, you know, this is the kind of thing that is very troubling, potentially. And so Lifehacker did a post about how to stop websites from potentially listening to you through your computer microphone. And it's worth just going in. If you're using Chrome, go in and look at this and pull up the media events and see if you're inadvertently allowing some site to listen to your microphone whenever they want.
I just choose the nuclear option on my Chromebook.
Which is?
Block everybody.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. It's on that Lifehacker article. It's near the bottom. It says the nuclear option is you go in, you do another flag, a different flag thing, and you go in and there's an option. I think it's actually in settings. And you just go in and you just say nobody can access it.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't use a Chromebook. So.
Do not allow any sites to access my camera and microphone. That is what I use.
Okay,
I have absolutely no media exceptions.
And then when I need to use it, I just go in there and flip it off the other way. And then when I come back, I flip it back off. Good to be safer than sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and there's so much promise, you know, with WebRTC, the real-time communication protocol to be able to use a web browser to talk with people and to have video and audio be part of your website or your web app. The future promise of that is pretty strong. So it'd be a real bummer if stuff like this killed it or made people really leery of it before it got off the ground. So
right. Is there an analog to do the same thing on your phone?
No,
probably not.
No, because if there is a pop-up, the only option is to go into another tab. If you're running Chrome on the mobile device,
yeah.
So you can't do pop-unders and so forth.
So the NSA is still listening to everything.
Well, of course. Phone. Well, they can turn the phone on remotely. So,
yeah, I feel so good.
Yeah,
so warm and snuggly. I feel so depressed after Steve's security tip of the week.
Well,
somebody's watching me.
Just have to protect yourself.
Get over it.
Yeah,
you're not doing anything wrong, Phil. Just don't worry about it.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
All right. Looks like Graham has loaded up the upcoming events.
Yes, yeah, he has.
He has.
Is it? Wow, he's even adding more. This is
yes, great. Glowing. It's like I'm still Seth, adding
them. He's adding Seth them in Levine real time, coming, for God's sakes.
Is coming on the, what is it? What day? The 5th of February?
What's that?
Seth Levine.
The 5th of February, the heretofore undisclosed VC guest,
yeah,
who I actually disclosed last week. it's Seth Levine from Foundry Group speaking on February 5th at Worrell Design in Northeast. I'm looking for a time on this. It's an evening event, I'm pretty sure. But I don't see any time. But anyway, the link's in the show notes. And he's speaking on Startup Communities, which is a book that Foundry Group published, actually his colleague Brad Feld, and talking about ways that, you know, communities around the country can build and strengthen their startup community. And of course, Seth is in town for a board meeting for Lead Pages, which is why he's coming to Minnesota, and they were able to snag him for a little talk afterwards that evening. I'm sure it's evening because the board meeting's during the day. And the word is that Clay Collins, the founder and CEO of Lead Pages, will interview Seth on stage, kind of a fireside chat thing without the fire. I always wondered about, you know, those fireside chats at conferences. That's a famous term that's used out in Silicon Valley, but there's never a fire, or not even a mock fireplace. But it's still called a fireside chat. For some weird reason.
Well, they just want to evoke that mental image.
There you go. Yeah. But they could at least have like a little, you know, thing back there or something.
Yeah.
Crackling, well, something or other flames, you know?
Well, before that happens, I'm sure you put this in here, Tim, about Product Camp on the 28th.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Okay. Product Camp Happy Hour. Whoopee! At Cadillac Ranch at the Mall of America.
Mm-hmm. I am unfamiliar with the space called Cadillac.
So wear your Elvis impersonator outfit.
Wait a minute. Phil, you've never been to Cadillac Ranch?
I have.
At the Mall of America? No.
Yeah. Oh, man. You've got to hit the 21st century, buddy.
What am I missing, Steve?
I've never been there.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah, I'm not a big bar hanger.
There's only one Cadillac Ranch I've ever been to, and that's the Cadillac Ranch. So,
you know. Ooh, ta-da.
No, it's the old cars. It's in Nebraska.
I thought you meant like the Mustang Ranch out in Las Vegas. It was one of those kind of things.
Or the Chicken Ranch or something like that.
Yeah,
he's been to that one.
Well, and then Magnet 360 has their influencer series coming up, which is on the 30th of January, Mobilizing the Customer Experience, the Power and Potential of Salesforce One. And I really want to see this because see really what Salesforce is doing and in mobile specifically, and what's reality and what's hyperbole and what's possibility.
Mm. Yep, that'll be a good one. That's an afternoon event at Magnet 360's offices near 394 and 100.
Yep.
Near West End.
And then your Beta MN, you stuck this in here, Graham, right?
Yeah, that's a new event. That's a happy hour kind of a thing on the 30th. So I will go probably right from Magnet 360 immediately to 11th and Washington South to start drinking craft beer with those guys.
There you go.
And if
he's such a tech butterfly.
It's a new craft brewery in what was called Spill the Wine. Do you remember that place?
Right. Yeah.
Kind of right on the Periscope there.
Yeah, it's now in Uptown.
What's that?
Spill the Wine's now in Uptown.
Oh, they have one in Uptown. Well, they had one on 11th and Washington at one time, but it's now a craft brewery.
Yeah.
a tap room kind of a thing, I guess. And that's where they're having this first one. And I'm trying to find a better link for this thing that displays the logos of those startups that will be in attendance. And I don't know if they're going to each be set up on a table with a laptop showing off their product or what. But I think Approve is one that's going to be there. An iCrime Fighter, which won the MobCon startup shootout. Probably the wrong term to use for shootout. That would be an incorrect term. The pitch competition they had at MobCon, they'll be there. But there's about 8 other startups that are listed. So I'll find that link and get it in the show, in the upcoming events part of the site. And then on February the 6th, our boy Phil is part of an update on mobile marketing. You want to talk about that, Phil?
The JMU 612, the 612 thing, right? Is that what you're
talking about? Yeah, and that's the morning of February 6th. So right. After we drink beer on February 5th, we got to show up at 8 a.m. at this thing?
Yes, you do. You must show up. Yeah. This was something that Kurt Prinz put together, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in mobile and what opportunities are there and the latest in mobile marketing. Jamie Erickson will be there from Software from Good, Bjorn Stansvik from MentorMate. So we'll all be chatting about mobile.
That's a star-studded panel.
I'm telling you.
When I read your bio on that, I thought, oh, my God, this Phil guy is an important dude.
Yeah, he cut out the Minovate stuff. I don't know why he did that, but he did.
Shame on him.
I know. It was a much longer, you know, it makes me realize, geez, I can't hold a job. And
Funny. The part they chose is really good, but I guess you should put the Minovate part first. Then they would.
Yeah, I think so. I think
the
so.
The nerve to cut it out of there.
Say, we missed one event, and that's the social media breakfast. Search and social.
On Friday.
Well, and the reason this is important is that if anyone has any interest in what Google's doing with search algorithms and how search engine optimization and so on is changing, then this is really a great event because the two guys that are going to be doing this, Josh Braden and Jeff Sauer, have a lot of practical experience getting their fingernails dirty, making this stuff happen and understanding it. So I think it'll be a great breakfast.
Yes, it will.
Wonderful breakfast.
And what else is new on here? Coco Google Happy Hour and Pitch Event.
Yeah, they're actually for Coco members. And again, I don't know about the event, if the event is open to the public or not. So I'll have to double check on that. But just in case you're interested, Google is doing a, what are they calling it? A Google demo or?
Yeah, something like that.
the Google Demo Day, which happens in April, and on February 21st, you'll see the finalists do their pitches at Coco from Coco members, and Coco being a Google tech entrepreneur or an entrepreneur tech hub is actually sending one of the winners of this event to the Google Demo Day.
Right.
So it'll be kind of interesting to see.
And this is only for Coco members. So if you've considered becoming entry level.
An Uno member.
Yeah. Where you can just drop in and hang out and so forth. That'd be a good incentive to do it.
Yep.
Great. Yep.
I think so. And don't forget about Mobile March.
And Mobile March. Yep.
Yay.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. So that's it. That's all that's going on. And that's a lot, but I'm sure more will happen next week. And we'll talk about it on
the Minovate Gang podcast.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Take care, guys.
Take care.